prohibition, the 18th Amendment to the Constitution, was in effect from the time I was 2 years old until I was 15. I do remember some things about prohibition, and of course I heard many stories about it. Prohibition was not a popular law with many people. A lot of people liked to drink as much then as they do now. German farmers had always made wine, and they wanted to keep on doing it, and I guess they did. Prohibition didn't really affect my family. We still had wine that the family made, but we didn't get involved in bootlegging. The location of Monroe County made it a prime area for bootlegging. For a short period of time, at the beginning of Prohibition, or before the beginning of National Prohibition, Michigan was dry and Ohio was wet. And with the streetcar running from Detroit to Toledo through Monroe, it was just natural that there would be much bootlegging done. My uncle was the deputy sheriff at that time, and as one example, he was called to Erie to on a report that a lady was carrying liquor in hot water bottles concealed under her clothing. He arrested her and brought her to Monroe, and by the time he got to Monroe, the evidence had all leaked out. There are many stories told about bootlegging. Canada was just across the lake, and the lake at that time, many of those years, froze over completely during the winter. Of course, in the summertime, they ran the liquor from Canada over here in boats, but in the wintertime, they would use old Model T Ford cars, and which the fellows would buy for very little, and if they hit a bad spot in the ice and the car went down, they didn't lose too much. They had cut out the door, or made a door on the driver's side of those old Model Ts so the driver could jump out if he started to sink. I know a mechanic who worked at modifying those old cars in that way. There, of course, was a lot of crime in the cities. In Detroit and Toledo, the gangs took over the trade in liquor. There were a lot of blind pigs, that is, places where people could go to buy beer and liquor. People would have to know a password in order to get in, that kind of thing. I'm sure that anybody in the area that wanted to drink could find liquor to drink. Whiskey was brought in from Canada. Beer was, some whiskey, of course, was distilled in stills that were set up on the farms, in isolated farms. There was one within a half mile of our farm. A neighbor told a story of one fall going out to shred corn, pick up the corn shocks, and finding glass jugs of liquor in the corn shocks. Evidently, the tenant who had rented the farmhouse had distilled whiskey and put it in the jugs, and probably was afraid that he was going to be raided and by the revenuers, and had hidden the whiskey out in the corn shocks. One of the prominent men in county government at the present time told me a story about when he was a boy. In the middle of the night, a team and wagon came to their farmhouse, and his father and other men carried containers of something upstairs in the house and put them under the bed. And the next day, his brother and he found out that there was whiskey in the jugs that were in those boxes. There was a lot of bootlegging, and of course, The Great Depression came on in the 1929, and people were desperate for ways to make a little money, and bootlegging or making beer and whiskey were a way to make some money. I don't know whether prohibiting alcohol was a good idea. It didn't work. It was what was called a noble experiment. I don't know of anyone who was injured from drinking denatured alcohol. I'd never heard much about that, but there was the story, and I think it was true, of the druggist in our little town who was evidently was an alcoholic or needed to have alcohol to drink, and he couldn't get any, so he drank some of the vanilla extract that he had in the store, because that was largely alcohol. I guess he died probably because of damage to his liver, not immediately or anything like that. But
about how old were you during this?
Well, I started when I was 2 years old, and I was 15 when it ended. So my personal experience with it, I knew some of the fellows who, farm boys who worked at unloading the boats that came over from Canada. I have talked to men who were involved in bootlegging. It was a natural thing for the fishermen in the area to get involved in that because they knew the lake and they knew how to hide. I asked one man who later on was prominent in county government, did you ever get caught? And he said no, but we had to dump it sometimes and then mark it with a boy and come back and get it later. Another man that's prominent in county government tells the story of the morning that they picked up a Detroit newspaper and his dad's picture was on the front page. His dad had been rescued from the Detroit River in the wintertime. Now, it was his dad, but it wasn't his dad's name. He was working as a bootlegger under an assumed name and got rescued. I don't know whether he got caught with anything, but evidently the ice broke up and somebody had to get him out. But this man told me that his father didn't have to do it for economic reasons, but it was a challenge. And I think that, there are stories that family fortunes were made during that time by dealing in liquor. One of the stories that I know is true, at that time there were straw stacks on farms away from the farm buildings. People would thrash the grain and the straw would be blown into a stack, and later on it would be baled and sold to the paper mills. Well, sometimes those straw stacks would catch fire, and in the ashes they would find human bones. Bootleggers fighting about who could have what territory disposed of a body by throwing it in the straw stack and setting the straw stack on fire. I'm sure that in the cities, not so much in Monroe, but in Detroit and Toledo, there was a lot of crime that was linked to the people running alcohol illegally. Mm-hmm. I don't know, speakeasy wasn't a term that was used as much as blind pig.
Okay.
They think the term blind because there usually was a door with a hole in it and somebody on the other side, you know, letting people in who had knew the password. Of course, there were bars that were rigged so that they could be dumped when they knew that.
Did you know of any locations of any of those?
I didn't personally. I wasn't old enough, and of course, on the farm, we didn't get into the city. I knew where there were stills on a couple of farms close to us, but we didn't get involved. I think neighbors generally didn't tell on each other. I mean, again, because the law was not popular. People had been drinking wine and beer and whiskey for years and didn't see anything wrong with it. It's amazing in a way that Prohibition lasted as long as it did because, as I say, it really wasn't popular with people that I knew. Well, the Germans always drank wine and beer. And,
you think people drank more during the days of Prohibition or less or about the same? I mean,
it was more difficult to get it. It wasn't that easy always. Not like now. You couldn't go and buy a six-pack or anything like that, you know. I don't think they drank as much, but I think the ones who wanted to drink badly enough still drank. And I know there was wine on the farms always. I don't think that any effort was made to stop that. You know, a farmer making his own wine, I don't think there was any effort made to stop that. Because they had their hands full trying to stop all of the liquor coming in from Canada in this area, especially. But, I say, Monroe County, between Detroit and Toledo, and then right across the lake from Canada, was a prime area for bootlegging, and there was a lot of it going on. So.
Did you know of many people who were drinking anyway during Prohibition?
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people?
Sure.
Did the kids even get involved? Was
no, I don't think young people drank as much as they do now. That's very true. I'm sure they didn't, because it would have been too difficult. And of course, in order to drink whiskey, you had to have money. And in that period of time, young people didn't have any money. That's all there to it.
Do you know what the children thought of it, though? Did they think it was terrible that people were drinking anyway? Or?
Yeah, I don't know. I only remember, you know, I didn't get around much. We were quite isolated on the farm. I remember seeing some men that were drunk one time. And, we went to visit somebody, and there were a couple of old fellows that evidently had been drinking, and they fell over a fence on the way home. We talked about that for a long time after that. But as I say, I didn't get around that much. There's a question here about did they start drinking again right away? I guess I remember being in Monroe the day after Prohibition, or a couple of days after Prohibition ended. And I know that one man knew exactly how many barrels of beer one tavern had sold. Evidently, there was a time, I don't remember that exactly, you know, what they knew when they could legally sell it again, and so it was manufactured ahead of time. Beer was brewed and ahead of time, and then on that day, they could, you know, I'm sure there was a lot of it drunk on that day. I'm sure there was.
But
it didn't affect us, obviously. I don't know about some. Where did they get alcohol? Well, there were a lot of places. You know that one of the fellows I went to high school with, and that would have been in I was a freshman in 1932-33, and that was the last year of Prohibition. But his dad was running booze into Detroit at that time from an isolated farm near Ida. Everybody knew that he was in the business. He was running it in at that time. So,
you know, if the crime was, do you think it went up maybe during Prohibition?
Well, certain kinds of crime, I guess. You know, of course, in a city like Chicago, those gangs killed each other off. Well, there was a lot of that. I don't know about comparison. There was a lot of, if you called drinking a crime, why there was a lot of crime, because I'm sure there was a lot of drinking.
But it didn't get worse, I mean, because of the gangs, there was nothing like that, though, in Monroe, Toledo, or Detroit, around those areas.
That purple gang in Toledo, there are stories, of course, which one can't verify, about older men who live in Monroe today who were involved.
Oh.
And I know one man who is a nice old man, and he had a nickname that I heard from a policeman that would have indicated that he was part of a group that was involved in gang activities. That's hearsay, and it's probably true. A lot of these people who were involved in bootlegging became quite respectable after Prohibition.
Did you hear of any of the stories that this man was in, or about this man, what maybe he did?
No, I guess not. I don't, he was supposedly part of a gang that operated in Toledo. There was the old purple gang that that operated in Toledo. I don't know whether it was.
I'm just curious because I live in Toledo. Do you know around what area that was? Or was
it
just like all over Toledo?
I would think, you know, that the east end of Toledo was a natural place for a lot of liquor to come in. But There were, of course, people who thought, and it must have been a majority of the people who had the right to vote, who thought that prohibition would be a good idea, but it just didn't work. It's something that, drinking is something that people want to do, and
we're going to do it whether or not it,
whether
against the law
or not. You know that there are still a few women in Monroe County who belong to the Women's Christian Temperance Union. And they have monthly meetings, and they, of course, are opposed to drinking. And, but majority of the people wanted to be able to drink,
and
so prohibition was ended in 1933. The Kennedy fortune, you know, Kennedy family fortune is built on the fact that Mr. Kennedy was able to get the licensed import Scotch. He got it all set up so that when the prohibition ended, he was able to, you know, he was the one.
That's Joseph Kennedy, right?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He was
never heard
ambassador,
that before.
Ambassador to England, I think. Maybe I'm wrong with that, but it's a story. But that, basically, that's what he built his fortune on. So I would say that it was a deterrent to young people drinking. I don't know. I'm sure some young people drank, but not like they do now. Because it would have been both from the standpoint of having money to buy it and the difficulty in getting it. And of course, people weren't as mobile then as they are now. I mean, sure, young fellows had cars, but not like now, and they couldn't go as far. I knew one man who was a farmer within a mile of us who had run booze when he was younger. He had an automobile, considered a high-powered one at that time. They had hidden compartments built into those cars, and they would run the booze from Detroit to Toledo, and, wherever. Probably was brought in to Monroe County. One of the neighbors, who was a teenager at that time, helped unload the boats that came over from Canada. They'd stash it away somewhere, and then somebody'd pick it up with a car with these hidden compartments and run it into the city. I heard the stories about that. I don't have any firsthand knowledge of that. But if there was you try to think about it, if there was prohibition today, it wouldn't affect me at all. I mean, I don't want any whiskey to drink, there would be a lot of people that...
What do you think would happen if they tried to do that all over again?
It wouldn't work. I don't think now, with young people drinking the way they do, you could never get enough people to
That's
vote
true.
In favor of it. Are there countries that prohibit liquor?
Mm-hmm.
Some of the Mohammedan? I thought that...
Saudi Arabia?
Mohammedans, yeah, aren't supposed to drink.
Yeah.
But I went to a wedding a couple of weeks ago, and one of my cousins married a... got all the problems.
Israel?
Where Beirut is.
Lebanon?
She's Lebanese, and I thought those people didn't drink, but they had a bar with two bartenders, so it must be that.
Like Saudi Arabia, they...
I think there are some of those countries, but none of the countries, England, France, any of those, of course, France and Italy couldn't possibly have prohibition because that's what they rely on for their basic economy, selling wine. So, I don't know, is there anything else that I could tell you about it?
What did the police think of all this? I mean, they had to have known that there was people drinking anyway, but did they do anything about it?
Oh, yeah. There were raids and like these little stills that were set up out in the country. If a neighbor didn't like it, he would squeal on them. And there were people, many, I guess, that were put in jail and fines. I always liked the story that they told about Frankenmuth, Michigan. Zender, who the family has the restaurant up there now, I don't know if you've ever been to Frankenmuth, you don't know about it. Frankenmuth was settled entirely by Germans, and the Lutheran Church still has a German church service on Sunday morning, as many as 300 people attend. They remained German a little longer than we, our people, did around here. That is, they probably, my generation, all learned to speak German and so on. Well, anyhow, Zender had a restaurant, and of course, Prohibition came along, and he'd been serving wine, and he got caught selling wine, and paid one of the biggest fines in the state of Michigan for selling wine. And of course, if a member of the Lutheran Church was caught doing something like that, it was considered a public sin. And when you did something like that, you had to get up in front of the congregation and beg their forgiveness. Well, the congregation had a meeting, and Zender got up and he said that he would confess to his guilt in the matter if all of those who drank the wine would also get up and confess. And everybody decided it would be better if everybody went home. But the Germans wanted to keep on drinking their wine and were willing to buy it. And I don't know. The fine for Zender was in the thousands of dollars, but they tell this story at some of our church meetings. But it used to be that anybody who was caught in what they called a public sin, I mean, if you got arrested, why then you had to, before you could come back to be a member of in good standing of the church, you had to get up before the congregation to confess your sins. But, so.
The church must have been all for Prohibition then. Most churches, probably?
I don't think any of the German church members were for Prohibition. I didn't know any.
Thought of that.
It would have been more, you see, Lutherans and Catholics drank. It would have been more the Methodists and maybe the Baptists who didn't drink. I don't know. I never read about who voted for Prohibition, but I don't think our people would have voted for it. Mm-hmm. Not that they drank too much. It's just that they wanted to be able to drink wine when they wanted to drink wine. I can still remember working for a neighbor. The old man had come from Germany, and with every meal he had his little wine glass, wine to drink with the meal. It was the custom there. He did. Or we would, in the middle of the morning when we were working, have a pause up and have a little wine to drink. Went to the neighbor place that I live now. There were two old girls living there, and when you got there to visit, you got a glass of wine and a big sugar cookie, about a big round with a raisin in it. It was just a custom, you know. My mother kept a record, a diary, for a whole year in 1908. They got, in the fall, from their vineyard, I think they got 175 gallons of wine, you know, juice that they made into wine. Nobody in the family ended up an alcoholic. I don't think anybody got drunk. They just had it as, you know, part of a social drink. There was no Coke, there was no Pepsi or anything like that. You drank wine or cider or hard cider. Cider that ferments becomes an alcoholic drink, you know. And then if you put some sugar and raisins with it, it makes it pretty strong.
Ooh.
Hard cider. Some fellas tell a story about leaving the cider ferment and letting the barrel sit outside, and when it froze, you know, that the concentration of alcohol was in the middle. Well, if they got out the middle, or the ice was on the outside, they got out the middle, they had a real drink. We used to have cider that had fermented. It had a little bit of a tang. It wasn't a highly alcoholic drink. But I think many of the neighbors, like the old German custom, they just drank wine as an addition to a meal. Nothing bad about it. Of course, there were always fellows in the neighborhood who drank themselves to death. Two fellows my age, one family, they drank wine until their skin got yellow. And they died in their 50s. I mean, they're always with that. And the way farming was in this period of time, a farmer could drink steadily, the one who drank too much, and still stay on the farm. He could get by. You can't do that today. But and there was the term, he drank up the farm. Well, that happened in family. I knew about that. But after Prohibition ended, people started drinking again. Yes, maybe they never quit at all. But I would say that this area, Monroe County, probably was as busy at bootlegging as any part of the state here. And of course, the area near Chicago was worse, I suppose, you know, the southwest corner. But this was because of the location between the two big cities and the proximity to Canada. So. But it was a noble experiment that didn't work. Didn't affect my family in any way. Neighbors made homebrew beer. How did they get the ingredients? They could buy sugar. Never bought too much at one time because that would arouse suspicion.
Oh, yeah.
Bought sugar and malt extract. I think they could buy some. Somehow they made a product called homebrew beer and would serve that. So, I think I might have tasted that one. So, I don't know what else to tell you. I hope that's helpful.
Yeah.
Yes, I knew people who drank anyway. What is this saying? Townships? What?
Well, how did they feel?
Oh,
after
the feeling after 1932. Just everybody went to drink. Didn't take long. It's interesting first, let's see, there were two licenses granted for in the village. One man who had tried to run a restaurant a Coney Island several times before, he'd gone broke, but he became very successful in the village because he got a license to have a tavern. And there were, immediately after Prohibition ended, there were one, two, three places in Ida, in the village. I mean, they were allocated according to population. So I don't know much about Monroe because I didn't pay that much attention to it.
Yeah.
But the young people that I ran around with didn't drink. So we didn't hang out at the taverns or anything like that.
Okay.
I'm mostly associated with a group, church, young people from the church. So the fellows that were maybe 10 years older than I drank more, I think. They were, maybe they had gotten started before Prohibition, I don't know. So
yeah, be careful starting during Prohibition.
And of course, I suppose that during Prohibition there would always have been the challenge that young people always feel about something like that, to do something that you aren't supposed to do, don't you think?
Yes, definitely.
It's just like some of the men got into bootlegging just because it was a dare, a challenge to do something that they knew was illegal. So.
Probably a lot of people did it just for that reason, maybe.
Yeah. But as in any family, I think if you are interested in family history, in ours there were some individuals drank too much, sadly enough.
Yeah.
You know, and of course that affected families. But not in my immediate family, more distant. A great uncle who was a single man who drank too much. Later on I had a brother-in-law who in his 50s, and the doctor told him to quit drinking or die, and he died.
Oh.
So, he was not the kind of person you'd think of as an alcoholic. He was, just drank wine steadily, you know, worked and drank every day and damaged his liver, I suppose, somehow. So, but I've never had to, outside of that, had to deal with the problem in the immediate family, so.
That's good.
I think that the mistake that many families make now is that you go to a graduation party for a high school graduate, and the parents think they've got the serve liquor, and they shouldn't.
No.
But, many of them do, and, you know, it's like just like weddings. People feel the pressure to have drinks at a wedding, even though the immediate family doesn't want to.
Yeah.
give in to peer pressure? Is that what?
Yeah.
My oldest son got married up in Ionia. The girl was from there, and the people here, knowing our attitude, thought it would be a dry wedding, and of course it wasn't, and because her family was a part of the social structure there, and nobody objected to that. So the only other wedding we had was my daughter's, and we didn't have drinks.
That's good.
But of course somebody sneaked some in. You know, I don't know, this isn't for the record, but I'll tell you about, we were married during the war, my wife and I. And, of course, living on the farm, we dressed our own chicken. You couldn't get meat. You know, we had 125 people for a sit-down supper at the church hall on a Sunday. We were married on a Sunday afternoon. And we were able to get some wine, and we served a glass of wine with each, you know, with the meal. Not that anybody got any more than that. It worked out real well, but there was even some objection then to that. But, of course, then afterward, on the farm at that time, you were expected to have a belling and a shivery. So after we got back from our wedding trip, the neighbors come. Somebody was able to get beer then, and we had beer and donuts. Shivery, you know about shivery?
No, never.
That's a French word. All of the neighbors come on an evening. Used to be the big weddings now, they got married and would have a supper at home and be there. All right, then that night all the neighbors came with shotguns and noisemakers of all kinds. I helped many times to carry a big saw blade with a rod through it like this. Two fellas with a hammer, bang on that.
Ooh.
Anyhow, make all the noise you can, and then finally the couple come out on the porch and treat the crowd. I mean, that was a shivery. So they don't have those anymore. But that was a standard thing, you know, even when we got married. But some of those got out of hand, too. The people get to drinking too much. But during the war, you couldn't get that much. But we had beer and donuts, I guess. So.
That's good. That was very informative.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
But it amazes me, of course, when I was my American Lit class in high school, there was a story by this American author, Jana Pokalin was the name of the story. And that was about a shivery, and I thought maybe that was still required reading. Down in Louisiana, where the French, of course, it was a custom with the French, they would have it not only at weddings, but if they decided they didn't like somebody, or if they wanted, in this case, the story was quite a lot, but in this case, they were going to shivery a lady that they wanted her to give some money for some charity, and she was reluctant, and so the neighbors were going to get together and make a lot of noise until she gave in. But the story itself had to do with a leper. You'd have to read it. There was a leper colony in Louisiana. You're aware of that? Mm-hmm. The leprosy, of course, is a disease of the tropics, and of course, I think we still have a leper colony over in Hawaii, in one of the islands over in Hawaii, but anyhow, there was one. All right. From ancient times, they always isolated lepers. Well, this story was about a man, Jean Apokale, and he lived in a house at the edge of the town, the city, and never let anybody in. He always made, they told stories, they thought there were ghosts and all that there, but what he was doing was hiding a brother who had leprosy. And finally, this story was very well written. Anyhow, finally, when they had the shivery, they were going to shivery him, you know. But a friend of his stopped him, because that night the brother that had leprosy died, Jean Apokalin died, and a Negro servant that they had carried his body out, and the brother, who was a leper, white as snow, the leprosy, the skin becomes white. Anyhow, he followed the funeral procession, that little funeral procession. It was a well-written story, but anyhow, that was about a shivery where they would go and make noise until somebody gave in to giving them treats or something like that. But it was all in good fun at the weddings.
We look forward
to that because you didn't have the big wedding receptions. If you were going to see the couple, well, you did it there.
Yeah.
That was the only thing they had. nobody could have afforded to spend the money they do now on weddings. The only one I remember was one of my cousins married a fellow from Detroit, and his family was supposed to have had money, and they had kind of an exclusive wedding at the country club here. We didn't get invited, but that was the only one I knew with anything like that. Others, in the 1930s, the couples just got married. Some of them had to live in at home. They couldn't rent an apartment or anything like that. Gosh, there were a lot of them just shared an upstairs bedroom in the family home. You know, kids don't realize now what how difficult it was at that time. I was able to move. I have to tell you this. I say now that I doubt if a young farmer could find a girl who was willing to move from the city where she had at least a bathroom and move out to a farm where there was no running water and no bathroom, no central heat. But my wife did. We got married during the war, and we lived in that old house for 5 years, and she had two babies to take care of. But you had to, if you were going to get started, you had to do that.
Well,
after 5 years, we got a new house, and she was able to enjoy that for 30-some years. So, you know. But I knew a lot of couples that started out with just a bedroom, and that they either in the family home or in the home of a relative or something like that. It must have been difficult. I know my wife's sister got married to a neighbor in 1936. She lived in the household with her husband's father and mother and brother. And over in the wing of the house were the grandfather and grandmother. And finally the grandma said to my sister-in-law, if you don't get a place of your own pretty soon, you aren't going to ever be able to use any of the pretty stuff you got for wedding prep. Well, then they moved into the old farmhouse where I started, because for a year or so they lived there before we got married. Well, then when we got married, Jenny's sister moved back with her dad and lived with him until after the war, so, until they could get a house of their own. So it was difficult.
Yeah, but it sure sounds like it turned out nice, though.
The marriage has lasted longer than some of them do today, where the kids start out there. I don't know whether it's it just seems to me that people aren't willing to accept circumstances that make the sacrifices that are necessary to get things done.
Yeah.
But we didn't have a bathtub. And to take a bath, you had a wash tub.
Mm-hmm.
Some warm water in it. Stand up and wash yourself.
Dry.
Jenny used to bring the two little fellas to town, to her dad's house, and give them a bath there once in a while. But probably some of the best years of our life. And, But I don't guess nobody. See, I wasn't used to the farmhouse that I lived. We didn't have a bathroom. I mean, the first 30 years of my life, we just had an outhouse. So it wasn't a sacrifice for me to go from home to this farmhouse, but certainly it was for her. And, so I asked him afterward about Switzerland, how they dispose of the sewage. When one of my neighbors, who had been born in Switzerland, went back there, he was kind of shocked in the morning. He had forgotten that this honey wagon, they call it, comes around and picks up the night soil. I mean, they didn't have any way of disposing of sewage. But I don't know how they do it. And I asked my brother how they do it in the little village in Germany where our cousins live. He said he thought they had septic tanks, but he wasn't sure about that. So in a country that, like Switzerland, where the soil is so rocky, you know, even here, they won't let you build a new house now where the soil won't take up the water from the disposal, from a seepage bed. You know what? At our house, we have a tank, a buried septic tank, and then a field where tile run out and there are stones over it, and that the water goes out there. So we have all the modern conveniences on the farm, but it wasn't like that years ago. We had at home. We kids were small when my mother died. My dad got a what they called a chemical toilet. All it was a seat with a 5-gallon pail under it, you know, and a cover on. And somebody had to empty that in the outhouse every day. But that's what my wife and I, we got one like that. And that worked. That's what we had for 5 years. So, there again, you want to get something done, you make the sacrifices to do it.
That's true.
Yeah, and our kids turned out well, and we didn't have any problems for 36 years. Not much sickness. Kids didn't give us any troubles. So.
Thank you very much.
Much to be grateful for.
That was really important. I like that.